song. The soundtrack is so dope.
So is it like a...
God, what a great... It's so well mixed,
so
too.
It's, and the tribal stuff, too?
Like, all I've listened to for the last, like, week is this and the Phantom Thread score.
What other soundtrack? And also, I gotta give a shout-out to Sean Cootie and the Black Times. However, yeah. It's pretty much this. It's cool.
I don't know who has that moment where they're just like, we should mix, like... tribal music with just this sort of...
Kendrick is really intelligent. Like he's just a smart guy. Like he knew exactly what to key in on. For
you know who loves Kendrick?
Evie.
My one-year-old daughter.
He really gets you hyped.
Yeah.
Great track. This is so distinctive. I listen to a lot of music like all day, and like when I go in the basement, you know, you can't hear what a song is. Mm-hmm. This song, you can hear it, you can recognize it anywhere. Yeah. Like it's a brilliant track.
God, I love Kendrick. From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 153 of On the Trips. On this week's episode, we are talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe film. Is this the first time we've reviewed one of these films?
Hmm.
Probably. I think it's the only one I've seen in theaters.
So. Yeah.
Don't
review that's too not many true movies, for me, however, yeah.
That aren't
No, I saw Guardians of the Galaxy in theaters. That was all right. I'm going to go with... it was not quite as good as The Black Panther, which we're going to review today.
Me. Yeah.
I'm your host, Nick, and today I'm joined by...
Sir.
And Kyle.
And we're just going to do it from... We're going
to
do the...
Do it to it.
The cut action style... we're just going to read the Wikipedia plot synopsis and just shout cut whenever we want to talk about something. It's pretty long, so, and it's pretty in depth. So if you haven't seen it, you know, go see it if you're
spoiler
mm-hmm. Sensitive. And if you're not, or if you've seen it already, welcome aboard.
Toot toot. Toot toot.
Do you guys watch Samantha Bee ever?
No, the commercials for her show make it look so bad.
No, it's so funny. She's hilarious.
Like, I'm sure she's a lot funnier, but it's like you would think they would be able to find a clip that's actually hilarious and not just awkward.
There was an episode maybe a month ago where she used the picture of current President Donald Trump in the in that truck where he's like playing in a truck like you would take a 4-year-old child to play in a truck. Pulling like the horn, and she just starts going toot toot. All right. Centuries ago, 5 African tribes war over a meteorite containing vibranium. One warrior ingests a heart-shaped herb affected by the metal and gains superhuman abilities, becoming the first Black Panther. He unites all but the Jabari tribe to form the nation of Wakanda. The Wakandans use the vibranium to develop advanced technology and isolate themselves from the world by posing as a third world country. In 1992, King T'Chaka visits his brother Njovu, who is working undercover in Oakland, California. T'Chaka accuses Njovu of assisting black market arms dealer Ulysses Klaue with stealing vibranium from Wakanda. I'm gonna cut right there. Apparently, are you guys familiar with Ulysses Klaue from the rest of the Marvel Universe? Apparently, he's in the second Civil Avengers. War. Is he in Civil War?
I thought he was in Civil. I think he's mentioned in Civil War.
Okay.
I don't think the character is in it, but I'm sure he's.
Because it must have just been a name where I'm like, oh, that's the name of the person that I probably should know about and don't. And I think he's in the second Avengers, but I wasn't familiar with him at all.
I think like.
Yeah, when I heard that he was kind of the main villain in this,
yeah,
I thought it was interesting, especially who he's played by.
Yeah, I like how that ends up, though.
Yeah, I like how that ends up, especially because I was really struggling with him until it ends up there.
Yeah.
I was really not liking that performance at all.
Yeah. You didn't like it?
No, it's so over the top.
I'm with you that I think it's good for... It's one of the best bait and switches I've seen.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's...
In a long time, because I'm with you that if it had been him the whole time, I would have hated it.
Yeah.
However, because of the way they did it, I liked that he was like that.
I've only seen it once. Maybe I would enjoy.
Kind of making fun of it.
Isn't he very like hateable?
Yeah, like, maybe so I would enjoy it more on a rewatch. Mm-hmm.
I took it as the character is like really making fun of like that bro culture in a lot of ways.
I guess. Yeah, maybe.
Because like, you know that Ulysses Klaue has some Affliction like shirts.
Yeah, maybe I wasn't giving it enough credit.
He's got some tap out shirts for sure.
See, where I came at it from, where I was coming at it from was more like Andy Serkis has been in CGI for too long and he forgets how to
act. Well, I was during our review of it on our show, I was saying how, does he ever do anything like not over the top? But then he was what's his face's sidekick in The Prestige, and he was like the most normal person ever. But besides that, I think most of his roles are really very animated. So
Njobu's partner reveals he is Zuri, another undercover Wakandan, and confirms T'Chaka's suspicion. In the present day, following T'Chaka's death, his son T'Challa returns to Wakanda to assume the throne. He and Okoye, the leader of the Dora Milaje regiment, extract Nakia, T'Challa's ex-lover, from an undercover assignment so she can attend his coronation ceremony with his mother, Ramonda, and his sister, Shuri. Shuri's awesome in this. Like, she's
pretty great.
She's so good in this movie.
Have you seen this past season of Black Mirror?
No, but I heard she's in
She's in the last one, and it's, oh my god. It's kind of this meta episode that references the entire series. It's really interesting, and it's also one of the like, it's a really good Afrofuturist short. Like, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I heard that she was in that, but I haven't seen it. I need to catch up. She was something else that stuck out to me. Let me look her up real quick. She was in Doctor Who.
Hmm.
Oh, she's gonna be in Ready Player One.
Nice. Uh-huh. I was gonna ask, as far as the cast, I hear like a lot of big names, but then I also hear a lot of names that I haven't heard too much about. For the most part, is it a lot of not well-known actors?
It's a
good mix.
It's interesting because it's probably. Let me see who's all that.
But I mean,
there's some huge. There's like some huge iconic black actors in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, like
Angela Bassett.
Angela Bassett is.
Yeah.
I mean, people are like, oh, Meryl Streep's greatest actress of all time, greatest actor of all time.
Yeah.
Well, for one, it's greatest actor of all time, and I think somebody said that at the Oscars.
But even Lupita.
Instead of actress, I would say. However, I think, I mean, Angela Bassett, she's like one of. She's up there. You know, she's been in a lot of good stuff.
But yeah, so
she's been
snubbed
many times.
You look at the supporting
Forrest
cast.
Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, Forrest Whitaker has an Oscar. Lupita Nyong'o has an Oscar. Daniel Kaluuya was just nominated. So, I mean, there's some.
Mm.
Yeah, and
there's
like
some heavy hitters in there.
Yeah.
Michael B. Jordan's been. He hasn't been in a ton of movies, but he's well known and all over the place now.
Yeah.
Speaking of the actors in it, and we were talking about SNL earlier, Sterling K. Brown is like really good in it. However, I'm going to need for them to cast Sterling K. Brown only in like troubled. Like,
did you
what dangerous hitman? Like, because he's too intense. I was watching SNL last night, and I'm like, I was like,
he's got a look.
Yeah, I was like, whoa. And it's like his delivery. Mm-hmm. It's like he's kind of like, is he okay? He's like,
we just finished This Is Us.
It's like got one mode.
Yeah,
just caught up with This Is Us, and they did a commercial for that SNL episode, and they were just talking about how he cries all the time in This Is Us, so hopefully he can be really funny in SNL. And it's like, yeah, he does cry. He does. He's a good crier in This Is Us.
No, SNL was just a further. It was just more Sterling K. Brown just being very tense.
That's
and
crazy.
Just
He's pretty good in This Is Us, though. I like him in that compared to all the other awful people on that show. But
yeah, I'm not even gonna look in that project's direction right now.
I have no interest in that show.
I mean, I'm not a like fan of Parenthood.
Everybody's
so
good. I'm just gonna
it's probably for the best. But
action at the ceremony, the Jabari tribe's leader Mabaku challenges T'Challa for the crown in ritual combat. T'Challa defeats Mabaku and persuades him to yield rather than die.
So is this where we talk about Mabaku for a while?
Yeah.
And Winston Duke. Okay. So for one, wow. Like, that guy has more charisma than almost any actor I've seen in years. And I have like real concrete proof of this. So I saw the first time I saw it, it was an all black screening. It was like invite only, and it was just great. The second time I went to the Apollo in Oberlin, and while, you know, I loved the theater. So Apollo in Oberlin, if you're listening, greetings from the Nightlight, great theater. And it's packed in there, like 400 seats. That is one of the hardest crowds I've ever seen a movie with. I don't think I've ever been in a movie where people laughed less. Like,
really?
It was bizarre. It was literally surreal. Like, no joke landed until that scene near the end in Baku's big scene where they go, you know, I guess we'll be spoiling
it. Yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah, where they go and visit M'Baku and try to ask him for help. Kyle didn't see it. Basically, like, he drops a couple of jokes in there and
about their diet.
All of a sudden, all of a sudden they just come to life. And there were things that were said that were just as humorous before. Mm-hmm. It was just that guy's delivery, the language that he has with an audience, incredible.
Yeah.
Like, that's real star power. Like, Winston Duke is the future.
Yeah, I definitely want to see the M'Baku, side.
Yeah.
You know how they're making, like, Solo?
Yeah. I'll take the M'Baku.
I saw a trailer for Solo. Trailers are wrong a lot of the time, but I don't give a fuck about seeing this movie. Yeah.
Give me the Lando movie and the M'Baku movie.
Yes. The only thing that I'm intrigued by in the Solo trailer is that the brief glimpse we have of Donald Glover.
And his base fur coat. Wow. Yeah, and just M'Baku was just like great. I'll watch 10 movies of that guy. Just brilliant.
Yeah. Agree. So after Claw and Eric Stevens, who Wikipedia doesn't even tell us who Eric Stevens is. Eric Stevens is Michael B. Jordan. So this scene, they don't go into a lot of detail, but they're like in the museum. That's a great scene.
Oh yeah.
Where a white woman's trying to, it's not mansplain if it's a white woman white-splain. To a black guy. I wasn't sure if that was a term.
White-splain is a term.
She's trying to white-splain to him what this thing is, and
it
doesn't turn out that's well.
Because he wouldn't know what it is, or is it just...
Well, that's it. It's her basically talking about the museum stuff, and it's her going through where these like things are from, and she tells him where one is from, and he's like, yeah, it's not really from there. And she's like, oh, how would you know? And he's like, well...
Snap.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot has been talked about how political the movie is. There's a lot of different layers to it, and yet there are a few extremely important, very like confrontational, awesome, like just true things said of that movie, and that scene has one of them.
Yeah,
it's when he says, oh, "Well, I'm going to take this stuff," and she's like, "Oh, well, you know, you got to." She say you got to pay for it, or
I forget what she says.
Say no, so you but basically, pay for it's it. Like she basically says well, you can't take it out of this museum.
She's the gist of it is. It doesn't belong to you. Plus the museum, and he's like, "Well, it doesn't
belong." Like he's like, "How your ancestors took it from people who didn't belong, you know, didn't belong to them." And it's just the reason it's awesome is we can talk about, you know, genocide of Native peoples by settlers, and we have like a surface understanding of it. We are not looking at where that's actually maintained. And like continued, and it's in places like museums, like that's that. And so it's literally started a conversation in the museum like community about how they need to make a difference. That movie did, like it's stuff like that that's come out of it. That's just wow, because it challenged certain groups very specifically.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great scene. So after those two steal Wakandan artifact from a museum, Wakabi, T'Challa's friend and Okoye's lover, urges him to bring Claw back dead or alive. T'Challa, Okoye, and Nakia travel to Busan, South Korea, where Claw plans to sell the artifact to CIA agent Everett K. Ross, who's played by Martin Freeman. Is that scene the same set as the one used in Skyfall, the casino?
I think that one's actually...
Because if not, it looks...
It looks very similar. So however, similar. I think that might be one of the sets that... Tyler Perry has his own studios now. So, and this is significant because it's the first time an African American has owned, like, they have listeners, you know, who are really into movies, we mean like studio as in there are huge stages. Mm-hmm. So there, he has his own like stages, and it's like the first time that's ever happened, and it's in Atlanta. I think that one, because I watched a video on it. I think that one might have been one.
Okay.
That was, and this is the first movie that's ever filmed in any of those.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, there's a lot behind the scenes that happened with this movie that is just like really historically important. And man, that scene.
I think that was the scene that I saw like a breakdown of it, and Ryan Coogler was talking about just the color usage and mm-hmm. what they were wearing. And
this movie looks awesome.
Yeah. And the outfits that they had and like the little symbols on some of their mm-hmm. outfits, how significant they are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this movie looks really good. It was shot by Rachel Morrison, who was the cinematographer for Mudbound. She's actually mm-hmm. the first female cinematographer to get nominated for an Oscar. Wow. Yeah, which Mudbound is a lot of great looking movie, and this is also a really good looking movie, but it looks very different from Mudbound, which I think is cool. Like, she's got a lot of tricks up her sleeve.
Yeah. And as an action scene, it's just,
yeah,
I feel like it's kind of revolutionary.
One thing that I haven't seen, and I haven't read a ton about this movie, it's mostly just like following people on Twitter, mm-hmm. but there was kind of an aside line that one of the characters makes about, she's wearing a wig.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what the line is? Because it was like...
Oh, no, no.
She's wearing a wig with straight hair.
Well, is it... She says... Nakia says you can whip it back and forth, like the song. Mm-hmm. And then Okoye says it's disgraceful.
Yeah.
A lot... There was... Yeah, anytime something like that happens, there was a lot of fallout from that. And basically... the way that conversation ended that I saw between black people was that Okoye was basically saying that in her culture, she's basically saying it's disgraceful to have hair anyway.
Yeah.
Because they're supposed to be bald, as Dora Milaje.
Okay.
And it was kind of interpreted by some as like an attack on black people who straighten their hair. And I don't really think it was meant that way.
And how she used it. She took it off and threw it at the
guy. Yeah, whereas I think that was just like a brilliantly staged moment. It's such a memorable mm-hmm. thing. Like, so many people have talked to me about remembering that specific moment that mm-hmm. I thought it was worth it.
See, I took it not as like an attack per se on mm-hmm. black women straightening their hair, but more of like a, you don't need to.
Yeah, it seems that side of the conversation got worked out. There's actually
because I never saw the
Black Panther reader, and I probably shouldn't even say that because there's a Google Doc that's been kind of circulated among a lot of like black organizers or activist people called the Black Panther reader, and it just, everybody's collected every single article written
about
the I'm selectively sharing it. However, there was like, that's what's so exciting to me about it, is the amount of dialogue that's come out of this movie and examination about things is mm-hmm. just amazing. And, you know, I still feel exactly as I did when we covered it last year, that I think it's the greatest Afrofuturist film we've ever had, and we can do better.
Yeah.
And that's awesome to me.
And the fact that Ryan Coogler's like 28. He's like real young, isn't he?
That's fucked.
And he's only made a couple movies, but the way he was talking about it, you could just tell he was.
So you've watched some of his interviews. That guy is.
Yeah, he's so detailed oriented and he's like real into every aspect.
I've never seen him interviewed.
He's a storyteller.
It was cool.
Yeah. Even just him telling a story.
And I was like, this doesn't seem like someone who's directed, I think, two or three movies.
Three movies. He did.
Well, they've all been
Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah.
Certifiable. Yeah. Like, I mean, I guess. Fruitvale Station has a...
That's the one I've heard.
Yeah. It's got
more of an indie feel.
Indie class. Yeah, it does seem to have kind of a... It's got a strong reputation.
Yeah.
So whoever I talked to about it. Yeah.
I remember when Creed came out, everyone's like, oh, it's from the guy who made Fruitvale Station. And I still didn't see it, but... I mean, it was on my radar after seeing Creed, for sure.
Yeah.
And now even more so.
I watched Creed again right before I saw Black Panther.
Awesome. And
jeez, I don't know what I mean. I think I'm allowed to say this. Like, I do partake in and you know, the fruits of the earth, and yet, jeez, I don't know if I was just out of it that day, because I did not That movie's importance and greatness and technical mastery did not hit me until the second viewing at all. It's so weird. Like, I noticed so much stuff.
I think it's better than Rocky.
You're right.
But I would say, I don't think it's close.
It's, I mean, technically.
Like, don't at me.
Like, have you seen it?
I've seen Creed, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen Rocky, though.
I'd really like somebody's opinion who went to film school, because, like, as really, like,
yeah, I only saw
critics,
once,
quote unquote, class of it. Like, it seems very clear that, like, from a technical perspective,
yeah,
Creed is, like, way above what Rocky pulled off.
Yeah.
And Rocky's a really good movie.
Yeah. Did they do?
Rocky's fine. I don't know.
So Creed has that one shot that's, like, incredible. Was there any impressive shots in Black Panther like that? Like, long.
Oh, man.
In this scene, there is.
Because I know with action, like superhero action, there's a lot of quick cuts.
And yeah.
You'll never get away from that.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard that.
Not in this one.
I've heard from some people, though, that sometimes the fights can be a little close up, like the Batman Begins type.
I didn't feel
not
that way.
Sure. It's never quite that bad. I would say that the action cinematography in Creed is better than this, in my opinion.
I think that the overall, maybe when we look at how he staged each fight as its own thing, I felt that the moments were different. And that's where you kind of noticed it. I did think that his ability to... That's probably the best fight scene. That fight scene in the casino is probably the best one I've seen in many, many years.
And he does have a one-on-one
fight between Killmonger and T'Challa is like beyond epic.
Yeah,
that's incredible. And it's so moving. And yet, you're right that like the big group fight, I didn't feel... We'll get to that one.
There is a oneer in this casino scene that we're talking about that's reminiscent of... there's a oneer in Avengers, and there's one in the episode of Game of Thrones called Watchers on the Wall.
Just pans over
where
the whole...
It pans everywhere and shows you what all the major players are doing. But you can tell at least in this, in Avengers, and I assume in Watchers on the Wall too,
although it's a little bit
stitched together, like it's not actually a oneer.
It might not be necessarily a oneer. However, the way he filmed it, like there's a whole... Maybe it is the thing you saw, Kyle, where it's that scene and he's breaking down that action scene. There's some really amazing technical stuff happening. Like, he did a lot of cool stuff in there. And it's probably the only action behind the scenes action scene that I've watched and been just as thrilled watching the behind the scenes version of it. He's got a really good grasp on like his group and his team and how to like coordinate a bunch of different people.
You find out about Jake Arrieta signing with the Phillies?
That's pretty cool.
I'm glad he's not in the American League. Also, fuck Jake Arrieta. Trump supporter.
You heard it here first.
He's a Trump supporter, like many other pitchers are, apparently.
Unfortunately. I mean, that's baseball, though.
Including Trevor Bauer. Fucking idiot. Yeah. A firefight erupts, and Claw attempts to flee, but is caught by T'Challa, who reluctantly releases him to Ross's custody. Claw tells Ross that Wakanda's international image is a front for a technologically advanced civilization. Fucking narc.
Right.
Eric attacks and extracts Claw, as Ross is severely injured, protecting Nakia. Well, he actually gets shot, doesn't he? He gets shot in the spine.
Yeah, he gets shot in the spine. Yeah.
I want to bring up, and I posted this on Twitter for the two people who follow me on Twitter.
Our Twitter is low.
The scene when Eric and Claw steal the vibranium from the museum, he also steals a mask.
Yes.
And there's a scene in a movie called Black Girl, which is like a really kind of prolific film in African cinema by Ousmane Sembène. It's a Senegalese movie. I've talked about it on the show before. It's about a girl who's from Senegal, and she gets hired to work in France as like a housekeeper. And they mistreat her so badly that she ends up killing herself. And when she came with the family, she brought them a mask as like a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And the patriarch of the family, after she dies, returns it. And the movie ends with the brother of the girl following this guy wearing the mask as he leaves, and then it cuts to like a straight on shot of him removing the mask, staring in the camera. And the exact opposite happens in the scene right before Eric, they blow up the prison that the guy's being held in. He puts the mask back on, and it has to be.
It's
if you look at the way the shot is framed, it has to be an allusion to that, and it's so perfect.
Yeah, I think that I would, knowing, after having seen a lot of interviews, Mark Kugler, he's easily got that vocabulary. Like, he named his five favorite films, and like, you know how we make a lot of lists.
You've never heard of any of them, or
I'd heard of most of them. Yeah, it's
a deep cut
list.
Yeah,
A Prophet was the first one he said.
Oh, really?
Like, I mean, the guy is.
That's cool.
We were talking about A Prophet in the.
Yeah, he's watched a lot of movies, like, and he's clearly still engaged in it.
Yeah, we mentioned A Prophet in the feedback episode before you.
And
he, made it,
you know,
basement.
He said the original like title, like
Un Prophet.
Yeah,
or whatever.
He's the real deal. So I would not be surprised at all if he'd seen it.
No, I think it's absolutely a visual allusion to that, and it's so perfect that movie has the kid taking the mask off. And this is him putting the mask back on. It's so cool.
Well, and this is the first time you see Killmonger.
Yeah.
You see him before. You don't see him.
Yeah.
You don't see who Killmonger is. You see Eric Stevens.
Yeah, you see somebody who you think is a lackey.
Yeah. And this is where you realize, oh, wait, this guy, and even in that scene, even though he's still technically not the main villain yet, you get the feeling that there's a totally different dynamic with him. And I like that, too. That scene it's pretty shocking. We see a lot of on-screen violence, yet we've got a character whose basic underlying philosophy of action is killing. It's in his name. And so how do you make a character like that, like, impactful and not just because, you know, we're so desensitized? Something about that scene where he just goes in and without, like, warning or, like, delay, just starts executing people. Mm-hmm. It is just a big statement, and it was just like, wow, you instantly kind of feel who this character is. And I thought that was another perfectly staged scene.
Rather than pursue Claw, T'Challa takes Ross to Wakanda, where their technology can save him. While Shuri heals Ross, T'Challa confronts Nuri about N'Jobu. Zuri explains that N'Jobu plan to share Wakanda's technology with people of African descent around the world to help them conquer their oppressors. This is where the kind of message of the film starts to, like,
it starts to
creep in. You know?
I've heard a lot that this movie is like a tale of two different movies, almost. Like the beginning, like the first half and the second half, and I don't even know what the 4-hour cut would have even been.
Oh god,
a third
cut.
Movie.
It's got to come out, cut. Right?
Well, you know what I've been calling for, and they're not. You know, I don't think I've
to release it into theaters.
I really think that's the move.
Yeah.
Release this to art house independent theaters.
I know it's a little different, but if they're able to do like the black and white Mad Max type thing, like it seems they could do something like
this.
Exactly. Especially with DVDs now and Blu-rays having deleted scenes.
I don't want to watch it at home for 4 hours. I'm going to sit in the theater and watch it.
Yeah. I mean,
I'll take a break.
I would rather see it in theaters for 4 hours, but it also seems like, I mean, this movie made $1 billion. They're going to make money doing whatever, like, special bonus thing on DVD. Yeah. So I think eventually we'll see the 4-hour cut.
Mm-hmm. It has been confirmed that it exists by the guy who did the score.
That's cool.
I can't think of his name. The guy,
I don't know.
Not the actual.
Kendrick?
Not Kendrick. It was the guy who did the.
Kendrick has the inside.
The actual, like, music score.
Mm-hmm.
As T'Chaka arrested N'Jobu, N'Jobu attacked Zuri, forcing T'Chaka to kill him. T'Chaka ordered Zuri to lie that N'Jobu had disappeared and left behind N'Jobu's American son, Eric, in order to maintain the lie. Eric became a U.S. Black Ops soldier, adopting the name Killmonger, after he killed a ton of people.
A ton of people.
I saw a meme online where, or no, it was a Twitter post, where what Killmonger does is whenever he killed somebody, he would scar his body, so he's just covered.
I saw this. You're about to bring up something I saw that I loved.
Was it a not only do women love Michael B. Jordan, but he's ribbed for their pleasure?
Jesus. No, the one that I saw.
What you're talking about?
The one that I saw was this, and it was like the same day it came out. Some Tumblr artists had made, like, it's a drawing of Killmonger, and it closes. It's like a close up of all the scarification. And they're all Lego prints. They're like, this is the secret to his power. Why it's so hard to beat.
I didn't see that.
And speaking of, there's a whole, speaking of X-rated Twitter posts about Black Panther, there's a whole page of M'Baku Twitter posts. And the best one is, M'Baku, he could blow my back out. Man, I thought it was hilarious. God.
All right. Eric became a U.S. Black Ops soldier, adopting the name Killmonger. Meanwhile, Killmonger kills Claw and takes his body to Wakanda. So, yeah. Killmonger just, like, straight up murders who we think is supposed to be the main villain and drags his body in a bag to Wakanda, which is pretty awesome. He's brought before the tribal elders, revealing his identity and claim to the throne. Killmonger challenges T'Challa to ritual combat. After killing Zuri, he defeats T'Challa and hurls him over a waterfall. After ingesting the heart-shaped herb, Killmonger orders the rest incinerated, but Nakia extracts one first. Killmonger supports Wakabi and his army, prepares to distribute shipments of Wakandan weapons to operatives around the world. I feel like Wikipedia is kind of glossing over
a bit,
a little of the, you know, plot,
yeah,
or
why he wants
motivations here.
Yeah, that was something that I heard about Killmonger. Is just like he's a way more fleshed out character, villain than you'd ever.
Like he's ostensibly the villain. Like he does kill a lot. He's responsible for a lot of people dying, and he kills. Forrest Whitaker, and he's maybe a little mean and harsh with the, like, the gardening women with the blue flowers or whatever.
There's so many layers to it.
But I would say from, like, a macro point of view, he's right.
Yeah, and that's ultimately what it comes down to. And I think I'd wondered how much I really wanted to get into this part of it on this EP, because there are so many layers to it, and it basically it was a conversation that happened within the Black community that I don't know. I feel like to get into some of it, it would take like a lot of explaining as to like why. However, I do have, and I'll probably do this at the end of the episode. I have 13 things Killmonger, parentheses, and the Wakandan royal family could have done differently that I think sums up my reactions to him. And I can just do the lines. And I can wait till.
Sure.
Yeah. However, Killmonger is very problematic. Yet he also represents a lot of things that are real, and his motivations are completely correct. And when we talk about who's right or who's wrong, many people brought up Nakia and Okoye and the women of Black Panther as these figures that are ultimately right. We have to remember that Nakia and Okoye work for a militaristic royal family. That's not independence, like the kind of independence we want to teach our daughters.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Like, and so yet, while there's a lot of patriarchal violence that Killmonger does, and he is in fact wrong for how he goes about it, and he could have done a lot of things better, and everything about what's toxic and bad about him, I get. However, I think we got to look at like the Wakandan royal family is just as problematic and awful.
It's kind of like the Big Lebowski just had his 20th anniversary, I think. It's the quote, "You're not wrong, you're just an asshole."
Yeah,
like if he would have gone about it a different way.
And that's, you know, we don't want to ignore the class issues that Killmonger was experiencing. The fact that he's a mainland African-American who has, you know, a lot more. There's a specific kind of racism directed at us that's involved in us. The belief that we don't have a culture, and the criminalization of Black people and the quote unquote dehumanization of it. That's perfectly encapsulated in Killmonger. There's a quote that the child that doesn't receive the warmth of the village will return to burn the village to the ground. And that's very much what happened with Killmonger. You know, I think there were a lot of layers to it, and it was one of the coolest conversations I've ever seen around a film in my life. And there's so much that happened around that conversation.
And I think, well, I guess we'll get into the way the movie ends, but I think it kind of redeems not only T'Challa, but also Killmonger's kind of legacy. in a way. Nakia, Shuri, and Ramonda and Ross flee to the Javari tribe for aid. They find a comatose T'Challa, rescued by the Javari in repayment for sparing Mabaku's life.
Who did Killmonger kill before throwing?
Forrest Whitaker's character.
Yeah. What's his name?
Zuri.
Okay, because you said... I thought you said Shuri.
Oh, yeah.
And Zuri. I was like...
Well, yeah.
I know. I don't know.
That just makes me think of something else, though. Like
Zuri, not Shuri.
Yeah, you know, people were like, oh, you know, he kills Forrest Whitaker. I mean... The way that the king, who's the first one?
T'Chaka.
T'Chaka kills Sterling K. Brown. It's kind of messed up. Like, he doesn't necessarily have to do that. And it's one of those things where, because, you know, we watched the same movie. T'Chaka seems to be, you know, T'Challa seems able to, like, fling someone against a wall or, like... Mm-hmm. snatch a weapon from somebody's hand, and he just goes straight for the claws to the heart.
He does.
I was like, come on, man.
He does seem to
executed that guy. He didn't. He made a decision to kill him, is how I feel.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was the right decision.
He does have, I would say, T'Challa does have better merch. You know, he's got better gear.
That's true. Yeah, maybe he really was kind of operating with that lo-fi.
Yeah. Lo-fi vibranium claw. No, I think
that is a good point too. That maybe his reactions at the moment were dictated by.
And I think that's another interesting thing that the movie doesn't delve into as much. But like, he basically kills his brother to save somebody else's life. Like, did he need to use that force?
Yeah, I think that was my thing. Was like, it seemed like his force pointed to a what's backed up, and that the Wakandan royal family is extremely militaristic, mm-hmm. extremely, like, they're pretty violent. And I how mean, they
yeah,
deal
the,
with
the way
their,
they figure out who king is
yeah.
this guy gets to be king if nobody wants to try to kill him.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, that's a conversation that was kind of lost in it.
Yeah. But I think that's an interesting question to have. Like, did, was he as guilty as, I think, not just Killmonger, but the mm-hmm. movie kind of makes him seem to be. For that, I think it's a little bit more gray than black and white.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where I will say that he definitely fucked up, and I would say what Eric/Killmonger is probably maybe not more pissed about, but
mm-hmm.
definitely rightfully pissed about is he was just abandoned at that point.
That was really the thing.
It's
like, and I think that's what, you know, a lot has been made of, oh well, the Wakandans try to offer him restorative justice. That never happened.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, we'll get to the ending, yet the real thing, it was at the beginning, right? They left one of their own citizens.
Mm-hmm. And Nakia, Shuri, I read that part already. Whatever, they spared T'Challa. Healed by Nakia's herb, T'Challa returns to fight Killmonger, who dons his own Black Panther suit and commands Wakabi and his army to attack T'Challa. Shuri, Nakia, and the Dora Milaje join T'Challa, while Ross remotely pilots a jet and shoots down the planes carrying vibranium weapons. Mabaku and the Japari arrive to reinforce T'Challa. So this is like that big battle that we were alluding to earlier.
Oh, yeah, it kind of skips over a few... Or I think we just didn't... Did we touch on the fight a little bit?
Which fight?
Like when Killmonger takes over?
No, it was like a half a sentence.
Wow.
It's a crazy fight.
It's like, well, for one, there's that sunset thing with Killmonger.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, you know, there's a sunset thing between him and his dad, Wakandan sunsets. When T'Challa becomes king, the sun's rising. When Killmonger
is challenges, becoming.
The sun's going, it's a sunset.
That's cool. Mm-hmm.
And it's that backdrop is... really well shot, like the colors that come out of that filming at that time of day was just really incredible. And like, I don't know if I've seen a fight scene that got me that caught up in the emotion of it in a long time. Mm-hmm. Are you guys aware of the woman who broke her retainer?
Yes.
The young woman who broke her retainer watching that scene. In her defense, that is a really tense scene. And I think she had her own, you know, she had her own motives.
were they not your same motives?
She had her own inclinations for what, you know, what was added to that tense. However, that tension was there for the entire audience, like just because it's such a powerful moment. It feels, I hate to use this word, like it's operatic. It's, Shakespearean almost.
I was going to say, this whole movie is pretty Shakespearean.
Yeah, and I think that moment is when it hit a high point. And when he just starts towing they're called the crocodile marks from Papua New Guinea. And, jeez, you're just like, okay, I thought I knew something about this character. And it turns out there's a lot, like, that impact wasn't there.
So how many
people he killed.
He had all those scars covered up until that fight.
Yeah.
That's cool.
You're going to be like, wow, that's pretty dope.
I've heard the CG in some areas is not the greatest.
What do people really...
I mean, I don't know what to expect, but I think it's mostly just like when they CG full body people. And I know they're doing over the top things.
Yeah, I had the same issue with like Wonder Woman 2. I found the CG and a lot of that to be pretty rough. I can't remember like the last movie that did. Like, I feel like people are trying to do too much and the technology hasn't quite caught up yet.
I basically agree with you.
When people were doing CG in smaller moments, it worked better, and now they're trying to build too much around it. That's really like the main gripe I have.
Well, the big thing is like, I think it was the main one is Green Lantern, how like they CG'd his abs or something, and it's like, I don't know, it's like very unnecessary. Or Spider-Man, like when he has his mask on and he's just like running or something, and so like they CG'd that sort of thing. It's weird.
CG should just be used to get rid of Superman's mustache.
That's it. And I guess they had to like edit out one of Armie Hammer's nuts and call him by your name.
Really?
The CGI'd one was out of one of his balls, for real.
I didn't know that. Which one?
I guess there's a scene where he's, I don't know, I think the right one.
Okay.
it got in the shot.
Poncho.
Because I just could guess because of how they, I guess there was like a moment where he's wearing shorts and it.
They covered up someone's face.
The scene.
So they've got to like edit it out. I was like, oh my God. Scene.
I'll have to rewatch it.
I guess the CGI with Black Panther is intentional, and I'm not sure I'm really comfortable with it. Apparently, they want the suit to feel like that it's more than just like a like Captain America suit.
Yeah.
They want you to feel like it's more like Iron Man's, yet not really.
Yeah.
So they decided, it was intentional to have it all CGI so that it gives it this like,
otherworldly, exactly.
And there's a couple moments where you're just like, oh shit, Black Panther's completely 3D.
Yeah,
like
he's like, he is a superhero. Yeah. He's no longer just like a regular king.
And I think the final sequence, the final showdown,
that's probably what people are really.
I think that's what I heard the most.
That's where it stuck out to me the most.
Definitely agreed. And I wonder if that's because of there's a lot of fire in that, I'm really thinking of the. There's no fire, really. There's like lights.
Yeah.
There's like...
Continuing on, confronted by Okoye, Wakabi and his army stands down. Fighting in Wakanda's vibranium mine, this is what we're talking about, near like the train tracks, basically. T'Challa disrupts Killmonger's suit and stabs him. Killmonger refuses to be healed, choosing to die a free man rather than be incarcerated. His last line is fucking amazing.
It is completely epic, and it's already like, I love a movie that's instantly iconic.
Mm-hmm.
It's instantly like, we're gonna be saying this line for the rest of movie history, and it's just incredible. I just want the listeners, you'll experience it. I'm sure probably all the listeners have seen it.
It's an awesome line. It's an awesome moment. My main regret is that he dies, because I want to see more movies with... Like, do we need another fucking Loki movie? Like, Loki's a cool villain and all, but, I mean...
Oh, they show him at the end?
How many... I haven't seen the trailer for the new Avengers, but, like...
There's so many people in that movie.
He's going to be the bad guy in it, right? Like, who else do they have? They only had two good villains, and they just killed one of them.
I guess there's Thanos.
Fuck Thanos.
I don't know how that's going to work out. There's some early reviews. They're like, oh man, he's like a Darth Vader type character. And this is before Killmonger. And I think now it's like, it's not going to be as good. How could it be?
Thanos, big old head. A big old head.
You know, people are comparing Killmonger to the Joker. And I'm like, I guess as far as good villains, there's a list of just any kind of good villain. Yeah, they're both on there. Yeah.
I would say he's
they're
like
nothing alike.
He's closer to the exact opposite of the Joker.
Of having like a real actual purpose. Like there's a that's like, legitimate.
What do we like the most iconic line about the Joker is some people just want to watch the world burn. As opposed to this guy's thought out like world politics.
Yeah. Right.
And
how to
like,
save the world.
He's actually got like a pretty good plan. I would say that's not what the Joker would want to do.
Definitely. Yeah. So I thought that was weird. And I mean, they're two totally different performances. Yeah. Too.
Maybe they mean like he's a good villain who's actually kind more the lead in a way.
Maybe.
In his own film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard some things where
or people are just dumb.
T'Challa's not even like he's like one of the he's kind of a boring character in this movie it's compared cool to compared to the side characters.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. I kind of liked it because
it's more in the vein of like a Batman where like people describe the Batman movies as like, "Oh, that's the one with the Riddler."
Yeah, but no one cares about Christian Bale as guess, Batman. He's
yeah.
Fine,
maybe
but.
Maybe people are saying boring because it's like not a lot really happens with him.
Yeah.
Like he's kind of coming off of Civil War where his dad just died.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of
they don't really
although I would say where he goes at the end, so we'll finish off and I think that'll elucidate a little
more. Great like the character development
T'Challa establishes an outreach center at the building where Najobu died to be run by Nakia and Shuri and that's it's a great moment at the end of the movie.
It is a really cool moment, and I think just to touch on Chadwick Boseman and T'Challa being boring real quick, just to add to that, was like I thought the way that they featured the black women in this role was like
amazing.
It's just so great.
Yeah.
I mean, they were, you know, regardless of how I feel about either anybody's politics, they were just such amazing heroes and so effective. And I loved that. I felt like he was sharing the space in a way that was just really cool. And like the male characters don't cede like their power to the women in a way that's like, oh, we've got to make room for women. They just do it because it's natural in their culture and it should be natural. And those women have plenty of authority and competence. So they just do it in such a cool way. I think to touch on that last scene, there's a poem out there called Dinosaurs in the Hood that is a really important poem for like black writers my age because it basically points out this problem where we don't have movies that just feature fantastic, amazing, escapist things happening to black people. And that if there's ever a movie, it always has to feature some, you know, really hard, just, you know, that kind of suffering that black people go through ticks over. That scene at the end, when the spaceship lands, that's Dinosaurs in the Hood. Mm. That's what she was talking about. The look on those kids' faces and the reaction and seeing that happen in that environment, that's revolutionary.
Yeah. So that's the end of the movie itself, and then in a mid-credits scene, T'Challa appears before the United Nations to reveal Wakanda's true nature to the world. So I think that's a little bit kind of him taking a page out of Killmonger's book, and he's saying we're not gonna be isolationist anymore. We're actually gonna.
What did people know about Wakanda before?
So
that?
There's a scene earlier on in the movie where it shows what Wakanda looks like to other people, and then there's like news clips too where they talk about Wakanda like it's the third world country, and everyone thinks it's a third world country. But then when they fly back in, you see that they're flying into what's
like a dome or a
force like
field.
It's camouflaged basically, and Wakanda is actually like, you know, a metropolis type city.
Yeah.
So basically, what they do at the end is say, like, hey, everything you thought you knew about us, you were wrong. We're more advanced than you are.
Doesn't sound pompous at all.
I mean, they don't say that. That's what it is. Yeah. But I think it's them taking a page from, you know, the good things that Killmonger was trying to do and say, hey, we're not going to just
share the.
Yeah, we're not just going to use this for our own benefit. Like if we have this technology, we can actually better the world with it.
Yeah.
So I think that was a cool kind of
beyond the grave.
Yeah,
it's like a semi-redemption of him.
Yeah, and it's a moment where, like, and again, I'm going to ignore, especially, like, there's going to be some people listening that are like, oh, well, like, I have a lot of political feelings about the ending. Yet, what's amazing to me about it is that what this movie does with villains is pretty incredible. And there's this term being called black radical solidarity. And the movie, the process of making it, so many elements in the film, like, they just represent that idea. And one of the coolest things is, like, how they learned from Killmonger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is where the villain, for the villain to actually leave that kind of positive mark on the protagonist is so rare.
Yeah.
They're like hardly, that's something that doesn't really happen that much in storytelling. And, you know, when we look at, like, most of the, like, Nakia, M'Baku, and Killmonger are all terrible in the comics. They're
like bad characters or evil characters?
Awfully written.
Okay.
Nakia is basically a murderous stalker in the comics who's just obsessed with T'Challa and is awful. And M'Baku is man ape.
And I saw that when I looked him up.
There's a lot. Yeah, it gets worse. He's basically trying to, like, take the Wakandans back to a primitive state. He's, you know, and then Killmonger, his biggest sin in the comics is just being totally uninteresting. And in the comics, his parents are killed by Claw, and he just hates T'Challa for whatever reason because of that. So they take these three completely, basically awful characters, and they revolutionize them and turn them into some of the best characters we've seen.
Are they
incredible?
They're going to be in Infinity Ward, or War.
Ward.
And M'Baku will. For sure. And Nakia, yeah, I think they both will.
And Shuri too. Because I've heard a lot of things, like, the interaction between Shuri and Iron Man is going to be, it should be good, because they're both, like,
very similar. They're the
techies.
Yeah.
And you know how in some universes Shuri takes over
as
Black Panther.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I want to see that movie.
He says either that, or he'd love to see Shuri take over as Iron Man. Which, I guess, in some
there is a black Iron Woman, essentially.
Really? Is there?
Yeah, it's not Shuri. However, that is
they could rewrite it.
Yeah,
I've heard people theorize that, like, the Spider-Man never really, like, they start past the Uncle Ben moment, which, like, in the new,
I haven't seen yet.
So, the new Spider-Man was introduced in Civil War, and then he had his own movie last summer.
Homecoming.
Yeah. And they start with him already being Spider-Man in Civil War.
And Uncle Ben's not around.
Yeah, and there isn't an Uncle Ben. So they totally jump past that, which I think is good because, like, Jesus, we've already fucking seen it. Like, we don't need to see Bruce. We don't need to see Bruce Wayne's parents die again either. Like, for another 50 years, can Bruce Wayne's parents just be... Already dead.
Be dead, right? Yeah. Like, because who's it new for?
Yeah, who gives a fuck?
That's why the Batman Beyond movie would be so good.
Yeah. But what I've heard people say is Robert Downey Jr. is going to need to move on eventually, right? Like, he's been doing this shit for...
Mm-hmm. Well, because I guess his contract is up soon or something.
And he's been doing Iron Man for two fucking... You know, he's
got to be...
He's got to be, like, starting to get sick of it by now,
tired,
right?
Too.
Like, how long has he been doing this shit? Like, he needs to move on. The MCU in general, like, they're going to have to pull a Game of Thrones. Like, somebody's going to need to go to keep people invested.
That's what Infinity Wars...
So
I'm hoping somebody dies in Infinity War.
So people have theorized that Iron Man / Tony Stark is going to die, and that's going to be, like, instead of... Spider-Man having had that Uncle Ben moment, it's going to be Iron Man dying. And that would be cool to open up.
It would be really interesting,
for Shuri to be Iron.
It's Man. And this is just to get really, really dorky, so I'll try to keep it brief. It would also, like, be pretty awesome because one of the coolest things that the MCU did just with Killmonger is the MCU is seen as, like, the universe that we don't respect as comic fans. Like, it's the movie one. The characters aren't going to be as good. They're going to be more two-dimensional and da-da-da. Killmonger is really incredible.
Wait, the MCU is the one you don't respect when there's a whole DCU?
Well, yeah, it's then. Yeah, it's much better than that. However, well, as in like compared to the other Marvel Marvel universes, like,
I just wanted to shit on those movies.
So, like the fact that Killmonger's possibly the greatest Marvel villain ever across any universe or any medium is like pretty incredible because it's coming from the MCU. So if they forge ahead and just make their own path and do totally different wild things like kill Tony Stark, I'm for it.
I'm for it too.
I'm totally like, they've proven that
because otherwise there's no
decisions. It doesn't have to be like the comics at all.
Otherwise there's no stakes. Like,
yeah.
In a lot of these other movies, you're not ever worried that any of these people might die. So why do I care?
Mm-hmm.
All right. One last thing. And I didn't see this because I thought, you know, I'm going to sit through, listen to this song from the soundtrack that I know. And I'm going to wait for the post-credit scene. And I see them at the post-credit scene. And I'm like, all right, I'm done. And apparently...
There was another one.
That was a mid-credit scene. There's a post-credit scene.
There's a second post-credit scene that I'm glad I didn't see the first time because I would have been mad the rest of the night.
Shuri helps Bucky Barnes with his recuperation.
Oh, my gosh.
I can't even remember like what happened with Bucky Barnes.
He's just...
What happened to him this time?
I guess he got...
Shot or something.
Shot in Civil War or something?
I don't know. This dude can't stay out of trouble.
At the end of Civil War?
I don't remember.
Probably going to give him a new vibranium arm. So here's why I'm mad about it, listeners. The war dogs are talked about a lot in the movie. Like, just the essentially Wakanda and Special Forces / CIA. And in the comics, they're named. They're like their own group of guys. And their leader is named White Wolf. He is a black character named White Wolf, who's the leader of the war dogs, a master of espionage and hand-to-hand combat. And now, all of a sudden... They're calling Bucky White Wolf.
Oh, are they?
Black Panther. Yeah, that's what she calls him at the end. Oh, he's a master of espionage.
The Winter Soldier and the
So now he's going to become White Wolf for the Wakandans. I've had an issue with changing the races of iconic characters since Wild Wild West, because I think if they can afford to make a movie with a black Jim West, they should just give us a black character. We want our own characters. I'm definitely not okay with changing the race of White Wolf into Bucky Barnes. Yeah. Like, let Bucky be his own thing. Like, we don't need to do that anyway, you know? And it's offensive.
Yeah.
Just flat out.
But...
Weird.
I'm not justifying that. But if they're going to rewrite characters like that, maybe that does... You. Maybe that does open the gates for Shuri being Iron Man.
Right. Nice. Maybe it does.
Yeah.
Which would be
pretty cool.
Dope. Yeah.
That'd be pretty fucking cool. Yeah.
Well...
So overall, we give it like a B-minus?
Yeah.
It's it's a decent picture.
It's doing okay. Yeah. Indie flick. It's made a couple
indie
bucks.
Flick, yeah. A little bit of money. Art house.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people at it, like, really understood it.
It's currently 7th on the all-time domestic grossings.
Wow, that's just incredible.
And it has a shot. It's probably going to jump up over like Last Jedi, and there's something, I think Jurassic World is above it. It's got a decent shot to make top 3.
Oh, Jurassic World.
Did you see the trailer? Percentage of the racial demographics of the people who went to see it domestically? 37% black. So, okay, me and my mom were like, wait, so every black person went? Like, I mean, considering the percentage of the population we are, like,
yeah,
essentially almost every single black person went. Like,
that's incredible.
It's hilarious. Should I go through these real quick? Or we'll wait a little
bit? Oh, yeah.
So, 13 things Killmonger and the Wakanda royal family could have done differently. And listeners, you are getting like such a sneak peek of this because these are just the headers of each section. There's like a Medium post that has much more of this that I will debut once Women's Month is over. I'm kind of taking... I've got a lot of stuff in the works, however.
Oh, you wrote this?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
I'll just read the headers. 13 things Killmonger and the Wakanda royal family could have done differently. Denied patriarchal violence, hierarchy, and coercion. So, like... They need to push all the women to the top, and mainly Killmonger, he needed to get his whole patriarchal violence thing together because it was pretty awful. It's pretty toxic. Enact collective government in Wakanda, so they need to enact basically direct democracy. Extend Wakandan citizenship to all people of African descent. Expand across Africa through outreach and racial solidarity. Offer the heart-shaped herb to all Wakandan citizens worldwide. extend Wakandan tech to all Wakandan citizens worldwide, extend Wakandan medical care to all citizens, place the Dor Milaje in charge of the military, swear deadly, targeted, and decisive military actions on anyone who harms Wakandan citizens, sanction European nations with high tariffs and embargoes on trade in Africa, sanction Euro nations by denying access to Wakandan tech and medical cures, fund racial justice orgs, actions, black businesses, and demand the release of any Wakandan political prisoners worldwide, including victims of the war on drugs. So, listeners, I'm going to let you unpack everything about that. I'm not going to say any further. However, when we come back next...
Keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, it'll be on Medium. Much, much more in detail.
This is the end credits song. Because this is our end credits, you guys.
This is some, like, love-making music.
It is. It's Ryan Coogler making love to the audience.
Basically, yes.
Wow. Hmm. Let's see how much...
Man, what a great track. They're like...
Wait, is this the last song? Or is it the other one?
That's the last one.
Okay.
That's the end credits. I loved the soundtrack because it reminded me of the 90s soundtracks. In that it... The flavor is like not quite new hip-hop. Like, it's kind of like... There's more R&B to it.
Oh, yeah.
There's
more of
this like kind of... There's more pop.
Yeah.
Which I thought was like, wow, this is so great. And SZA robbed at the Grammys. Robed.
Who'd she lose to?
I don't even remember.
I don't care. Some hack.
Some hack. Yeah, SZA is the truth.
Good song. Good soundtrack. Great soundtrack.
Great soundtrack. One of the best in years.
Yeah.
Best hip hop soundtrack of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. So do we think it's going to win the Oscar next year?
I mean, I don't know. I really don't even know what to think, because there's so many things that point towards, like, they might just give it some really strong nominations, and yet at the same time, there's a lot of obstacles to getting nominations there.
I could see it getting...
One of them is it's a comic book movie.
Yeah, I could see it getting a nom, though. Like, finally, people are like, it's about time we've had...
Nom for...
Something other than editing and sound.
Yeah, sound design.
Yeah.
Visual
sound
effects.
Mixing.
Yeah. But I mean, the last like big contender, some people thought Logan. I think those people are like factually wrong. But like Dark Knight, I think, was a strong contender for actually getting it and didn't. I think
that was back when they...
Like, it's a good time.
The
there were only
was,
five.
Yeah.
Now would be a good time for it. I think one of the things coming against it is just... It's, you know, a February release, but Get Out was too, and that managed to...
Yeah.
Do you think any of... Which one of them would get any actor-specific noms?
I would love to see Michael B. Jordan get a nomination retroactively for his career's work.
Right. Pretty much. Like, jeez.
Was he nominated for Creed?
A lot.
No.
Man.
No, I'd like to see him get a Best Supporting, even though he's... probably more of a lead. I don't think the studio would push him for a lead. They would call him supporting. I think Letitia Wright could get a supporting. I don't think she will, but I she'd be good as it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, who knows? The rest of the year might be it's full like, of amazing.
There's also another huge superhero movie coming out.
Which, man, they've got to be like afraid of that release because... maybe because it's an Avengers movie.
Oh, because they push it to
a million.
They moved it. Back
just,
or up?
I don't know. Yeah, I knew they did.
They moved it because I think they were afraid of the Solo movie for some reason.
I just think, like, I don't see how it's going to be as big of an event as Black Panther in the movie. Which would be... It would be a weird thing for them because it's like the Avengers is supposed to be the biggest thing, you know?
I don't know. I could see it. I could see it getting a few. Yeah. I definitely see it not getting others that I think it would be nice to get.
Have you heard about his next project?
No. Kugler's?
Oh, you didn't know about this yet? Dude,
I don't think so.
About to blow your mind. Essentially, do you remember there was a teaching crisis that happened around when it started? It was 2005. By the time everything was shaken out, it was 2008. And there was a group of black teachers in a, what do you call it? The kind of school, a charter school. And charter school's going really well. They needed to, because of No Child Left Behind and the testing behind that, essentially the teachers were convicted. We got them on RICO charges of juking the tests and changing the scores. So Ta-Nehisi Coates is writing a film called Wrong Answer that's going to be directed by Ryan Coogler and starring Michael B. Jordan about that incident. I've talked so much about why this is such a brilliant follow-up move. Mm-hmm. That I don't know. I almost feel like,
Has Ta-Nehisi Coates written a film before?
No, and what's incredible about him doing it is he won the MacArthur Genius Grant. Mm-hmm. Goes from that to writing comic books.
Yeah.
And writing them brilliantly. Like, they're good comics. And now he's writing a movie. Like, that's... Everybody around that project is exciting. And with Coates writing, it's going to be a statement. And I think, like, that story unearths so many layers of racism and systemic racism and whatnot. And it's just, like, wow. I'm pretty excited. It's going to be, like, a major... achievement.
Yeah,
I think without them even trying, mm-hmm. just because of who's involved. Yet, that's the thing too. Those guys, I expect they put out really good work.
Yep,
no hacks among them.
I'm looking forward to it. All right, Black Panther.
The Black Panther.
$1 billion. Good movie.
Mm.
I'm trying to think of a pun to end this out with, but can't do it. Anybody? Puns?
That Forrest Whitaker Black Panther impression is the only one I got.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
All right. As always, I got to plan these puns ahead of time. I feel like I do this every other episode.
We try to wing it, and we're just not. We still have those kinds of improv chops.
Nope. I've been Nick.
I've been Sarah.
And Kyle.
And join us again. We'll be stuck on the T apostrophe ropes. There we go.
To ropes.